Hey, you guys, Tomes of Terror time once again, where I talk about various horror fiction. So let's just get right into it. This book was one that I saw come up on a couple of recommendations, and I was intrigued by the premise because it kind of concerns like a cursed film, and I really, really like that trope in fiction. It's like, I know it's not hugely, you know, it's not used a lot. I was thinking in particular of the John Carpenter segment on Masters of Horror, which is called Cigarette Burns, which was kind of about a movie, like, you know, this mythical movie that would like drive you crazy if you watched it. There's also like the more recent movie Antrim, which is like the deadliest film ever made, which was supposed to curse you if you watched it. And there's been like some other fiction too about the same thing. I think there's one called Flicker. I can't remember the author, but I haven't read it. So this book right here sounded like right up my alley because I love stuff about cursed films. I don't know why I love that so much, but I do. So the book I'm talking about is Experimental Film by Gemma Files. I had heard of Gemma Files before. I'm pretty sure that I read some of her short fiction like many, many years ago. And I know she's won like a lot of awards for her fiction and various things. I believe she was born in Britain, but I think she lives in Canada, and this book is actually set in Canada. This book came out in 2015. Now, the basic gist of the book is that it's told from the point of view of this woman named Lois Cairns. Now, Lois is kind of a film teacher. She like teaches at a film school, so she's kind of like a film nerd, I guess. And Gemma Files, the author, apparently this, I'm not saying that this character is her, but it is like using a lot of the same because she used to, you know, be a film historian or write about film and stuff like that. So she's using a lot of her expertise. She's using a lot of her expertise in the Canadian film industry to, you know, inform this character because that's basically what this character's job is. So she's kind of like Lois, the main character. She's kind of been put out of work a little bit, or, you know, she's kind of underemployed, I guess. She's worked for like film magazines, like writing for them. And, you know, the Canadian film industry, she goes a lot into the differences between, you know, how they make films in Canada versus how they make them in the US, which I will say right off the bat, if you're not really a film geek or you don't really care about the film industry, this book might not be for you because it is a horror story. It is like a ghost story kind of a fashion. And it does have something to do with like essentially a cursed film, but there's a lot of stuff about the ins and outs of the Canadian film industry told from someone who, you know, the author who actually experienced all of that. So she's like putting a lot of, and somebody who's like really into independent film. So there's a lot of that in there. So I can see how, like, I've seen some reviews of it. It seems like on Goodreads, this has like really high reviews, but people that hated it seem to really, really hate it. Like they thought it was too boring, or they thought it was pretentious, or they thought, you know, why is she going on and on so much about the Canadian film industry? It's like, who cares? Just get on with the story. But I mean, from my point of view, I'm fascinated by filmmaking and I really like independent films. So I was kind of fascinated by all of that stuff. And to me, it didn't really get in the way of the story. It just kind of like informed it and informed the main character, the one who was talking. I also kind of liked the main character because, so she not only has this kind of thing where she's underemployed because, you know, there's not that many films being made and she hasn't, you know, and the film industry isn't that big, you know, and it's very like small, it's very incestuous. They don't have a lot of money to throw around, but she's also dealing with a son named Clark who has autism, an autism spectrum disorder. And so she's kind of dealing with that. So it comes to pass that she's at a film festival one night, like she's covering it for some magazine that's not really paying her. It's just like kind of like a small zine, like they would call it back in the day, where you just kind of like wrote for exposure, which I guess a lot of people still do nowadays. But so she goes there to cover it. And while she's there, she watches this short film, which is made by this guy named Rob Barney, and Rob with a W at the beginning. So you can tell right away what kind of person this is. He's this really wealthy dude who's kind of like a dilettante. Like he wants to make films, but he doesn't really seem to have a lot of talent. Like he always kind of like works off the backs of like other people or steals other people's shit. But he has so much money that he like gets away with it because he's kind of like a conniving dickhead, basically. So he's showing some short films, And Lois goes to cover them, and she notices one that is actually really alluring. It's like really fascinating to her, and it's like ingenious. And in it, there's, it's almost kind of like he made one film and then like he had this other film like wrapped up in it. And apparently what this other film was essentially an old film made like very early in the 20th century by a woman named Iris Whitcomb. The thing about Iris Whitcomb is that they're trying to prove like whether she was actually the first female filmmaker in Canada. And she had made these really, really creepy films on silver nitrate stock, which if you don't know like what that, it's very, very flammable. And it actually caused a lot of fires like back in the day, which is why they eventually like stopped using it. And why a lot of older films have been lost because they basically just combusted. So they go a lot into that in this book as well. Like silver nitrate stock being a very big component. So Iris Whitcomb was this kind of mysterious figure who had a son named Hyatt who disappeared. And then a couple years after that, Iris Whitcomb herself, she had gone into mourning like after that. And like thereafter was like only seen in like, you know, full mourning, like the full dress, like the big hat with the veil over it so you can see her face, all this other very ghostly. So shortly after her son went missing, I believe it was 2 years, if I'm remembering it correctly, she essentially just disappeared off a train. Now, this is interesting because I believe, and I can't remember the dude's name, but I believe this is sort of based on a real story about a guy who was apparently coming somewhere to like show this new like movie technology, and then he disappeared off a train and they never figured out what happened to him. This was like pre Thomas Edison or pre whatever. So this is kind of like based in fact. And like I said, there's a lot of film history, a lot of film references, a lot of stuff in this book. So if that sounds like something that you're just going to be like, no, thank you, then probably this wouldn't be for you because there's a lot of that in there. So I'm not going to lie. So basically Lois, she starts to investigate where this film, because Rob Barney, this snotty rich dude, has essentially, he didn't steal it. He calls it sampling. He took this old film that he found and basically made some of his own film and wrapped it around it. But he's basically using these old films to like pump up his stuff because his stuff isn't really that good. So Lois kind of gets interested in finding out if this woman did indeed make these films, what they mean. So she wants to write a book about it, and she ends up like securing a grant to write a book about it, which is like she's very excited because this is kind of like the first big monetary thing that she's had for a very long time. Because like I said, she's been just like writing for free for magazines and hasn't really been working all that hard recently. So she's very happy. This is a big coup. She gets like $12,000 or something like that. And she hires this other, a former student of hers, whose stuff she liked, named Safi, and they start the investigation. So while they're doing the investigation, so they have that going on, and then they have Rob Barney, this wealthy guy, who is so rich that he's like able to pull strings like behind the scenes, I guess. So he's kind of trying to sabotage it because he's saying that Lois like stole his idea. Like, you know, he's like, I, you know, found this film and you wouldn't have seen it if it wasn't for me. And now you've got all this money for the grant and you're like taking my idea or whatever. So we have that going on. But meanwhile, as the story goes on and she starts going further and further into the investigation into these films, these short films that they find that are all on silver nitrate stock, and goes into the history of Iris Whitcomb and this place where she lived called Vinegar House, which she actually does go visit, it comes to pass that perhaps, and as I said previously, I'm not going to spoil anything outright, but I am going to give details about the story that if you prefer to come to stories completely blind, which, like I said, I like to do that too, which is why I don't usually watch reviews for things until after I've already read them or seen them. So if you just want to come into this completely blind, then probably, you know, you should wait until after you read it and then come back and watch this, because I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to spoil the ending or anything like that, but I am going to give details that maybe you might not want to know before you read it. So just saying that right there. So as it goes on, it seems that these short films that she's found, it's weird because all of them are similar. Like the theme is similar. It's basically like a field and this creepy woman, like with all these people in the field, and then this creepy woman comes out and she's like all white, and it's like weird special effects, like she has mirrors all over her and stuff like that. And as they go on, they discover that it's this strange Eastern European legend about a lesser god called Lady Midday. And Lady Midday is essentially this figure who, if you're out working in the fields and you're kind of shirking, gold bricking, you know, just out there not really doing what you're supposed to be doing, then right about noon, or I think in the book it's like the minute between, what is it, between the minute and the hour, like right before noon strikes, then Lady Midday will come and fuck up your shit and like cut your head off with her big scissors and whatever. So it's weird because Iris Whitcomb has apparently made these films, and I think there are six of them, but each of them are like subtly different, like they're getting a little bit better. And so Lois, the protagonist of the book, is basically trying to figure out, why did she make these films? Why did she make them all about this particular legend? Like, what's going on? And as all that's going on, also physical shit is starting to happen to her. Like, she's starting to pass out and have seizures, and she starts to believe that maybe Lady Midday is real, and that maybe that's what happened, like, way back in the day to Iris Whitcomb. Maybe that's what happened to her son Hyatt. Like, maybe that's how they disappeared. Maybe Lady Midday took them, or she had some kind of involvement in those events. So that's basically the gist of the story. Now, as I said, it's kind of an odd book because I would call it literary horror, I guess, you know, just as I've said about some of the other ones. It has a very strange juxtaposition of tone, which, like I said, it didn't bother me. But because some of the passages, like especially when they're talking about the legend and, you know, the films and everything, the prose is like very beautiful and very lyrical. But then when it's like from Lois's point of view, which technically the entire book is her record of like what happened, you know what I mean? So it's all in first person. She comes across as very, I've seen her called unlikable. Like I said, that seems to be kind of a recurring motif, like on the books that I'm reviewing this show. It's like people call her like unlikable protagonist. I didn't find her unlikable, but I can see how someone would. She's kind of abrasive. You know, she has her autistic son, Clark. She loves him, but she's pretty free about talking about how difficult it is to relate to him, how difficult it is to deal with him because of the way that he is. So she's not shy about being like that. And like I said, she's very, I don't know, I'm not entirely sure. She is very abrasive. She's kind of bitchy. She's very unhappy. So I can see how that would turn some people off. I actually quite liked her. I found her very relatable because I'm kind of cranky like that myself. So it didn't really bother me. But the strange thing is that when she's talking, which like I said, technically the whole book she's talking because it's all from her perspective. But, you know, sometimes she'll be talking and, you know, the way she talks, she calls everybody man, even if they're a woman and, you know, stuff, which I do that as well. But then, like, there'll be long passages where something is described and it's like this kind of beautiful, like, lyrical prose. So it is kind of like a strange juxtaposition. I will say that it took me a while to get into this book. You know what I mean? To kind of catch the wave of it. Where are we going with this? Because like I said, it's kind of front-loaded with a lot of stuff about her and her autistic son, her, you know, contentious relationship with her mother. And then there's a lot of stuff about the Canadian film industry, which is based on real shit because Gemma Files, the author, like did work in that field for a very long time. So there's a lot of that. So if you think that's going to bother you, then probably you shouldn't, because I saw, as I said, most of the reviews, it seemed like 80-90% of the reviews were like, you know, 4 or 5 stars. But then there were some that were like 1 star. They're like, I got like 40 pages in and I just DNF'd it because I just couldn't get into it and stuff. And I get that. Okay. So just know that going in, that it's not for everybody. I mean, I know every book's not for everybody, but this one's definitely not for everybody. If you're not a film geek, if you're not interested in, you know, the little details about the Canadian film industry, if you're not interested in, you know, her personal journey, like with her autistic son and stuff, then maybe you might want to skip it, because it takes a while to get to the creepy ghost shit. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying. Like I said, it didn't bother me, but it did take me a while to get into it. I never really thought, oh, I'm not going to finish it, but I was kind of reading it, and I'm very patient, you guys know. I mean, you've seen my reviews about movies. I love slow burn movies. I love slow burn books. I like a slow build up. This one, I almost got to the point where I was getting impatient. I was never going to not finish it, but I was getting to a point where I was like, okay, like we got the curse movie, because they introduced that fairly early on, like her going and seeing this really weird movie. So that was intriguing, but it did take a little while to get there. So again, that's another thing that you might want to keep in mind. You know, that said, I really, it's not my favorite one that I've read so far, like for this show, but like the last third of it probably like redeemed the whole thing. And actually reading the end of it made me want to go back and start it over and then read it over again, like knowing what happened at the end and like what and where the story was headed toward. So I actually might, you know, wait a few months and then reread this one. But like I said, it didn't really bother me, all of the stuff at the beginning, which, as I said, I can see how that would turn some people off, because, you know, if you're not interested in that kind of thing, you're like, you know, just get on with it. But that didn't bother me. But I will say that I think the end of it was like by far the best part. Like, I think it built up really well, and then it got like suitably horrible, like at the end, like it really creepy, and the imagery was really creepy and really like well described. So I liked that very much. If you like film geekery, and this sound, and it's kind of like a cool ghost story as well, Cursed Films, experimental film by Gemma Files, which came out in 2015. So check it out. I recommend it if you're into that type of thing.